Angelica Board, National Benevolent Board. These boards operate certain activities during the year in line with their purposes and predictions, and then they come to the annual meeting and they make report to these activities. Another powerful aspect of our convention is my emphasis upon really collecting a large sum of money. Recently, I have been more concerned about this programming inspiration, the passing and sharing of knowledge. The last few years, I would say in the last 10 years, began to move to the area of acquiring properties and doing certain things with those properties. They acquired Orange Grove in Jacksonville, Florida, where the president, Dr. James Carl Sam, lived. And then there, recently acquired a headquarters building in Dallas, Texas, for the housing of the Foreign Mission Board. And many of the state bodies have organizations and groups and buildings in the state confines, but they're not under control of the National Baptist Convention of America. Now, these boards are operated by a small segment of persons, and then those persons add on to each state. Even if you don't think that what I'm referring to now, take the National Foreign Mission Board. The president recommends the officers of the board, they're elected by the president. And then the president of each state is authorized to make appointments to that board. And from those appointments to the state, they constitute the total board and the board protocol to accomplish the work they designed to do. This is true of all boards. There are some commissions connected with it, like the Commission on Ministry, Commission on Orthodoxy, Commission on Transportation, and the like. So these commissions position papers on those particular things, and they present them to the annual session. And they are recorded in these journals that we have that come out each year. They come out a year behind, 78, 79 will come out in September of the year. The annual session of the convention is held following the first Sunday in September, wherever the convention is. Coming up this year, this weekend, meeting in San Francisco, California. The finances of the convention are brought in by representation from the churches and conventions. You see, it's congregational polity. There is no hierarchy above it. In Baptist polity, the basic core of authority resides in the local congregation. Each local congregation is separate, distinct, and independent. The state association, the district association, or the state convention, or the national convention, cannot dictate to the local congregation, to the local church. All relationships are voluntary, and no one demands that they have to believe that the convention is all on a voluntary. Now, we have a paper called the Union Review. It comes out of Nashville. And the thing that developed the split, as we call it, in it was the publishing board. Now, maybe a little word about that. The publishing board was started about the year 1896. The National Baptist Publishing Board was started by 1896. Started by a brother, a preacher by the name of R.H. Boyd. He was the secretary treasurer of the Home Mission Board of the National Convention. And he had a basic idea at that particular time. It's beginning to come, progress in our thinking today, but he was the man back before the turn of the century had an idea that you're beginning to espouse today. print those thoughts, and you must be able to market those thoughts. Well, at that time, that was a revolutionary idea. We had time to go into the history of the struggle, because you see, at this particular time, all the writing was being done by white brothers, white Baptists. And now and then, they allowed black Baptists to do a little writing, and then they would censor it, and then it would be carried to material. The Judson Press, the American Baptist Publication Society, the Judson Press, where they control the total development of literature, development of ideas, development of thought. And Boyd said, this doesn't make sense. Interesting thing about it, Boyd had been born a slave himself. And he wasn't freed until he was around 23 years of age, something like that. He had to learn to read and to write, to move into areas of business, and then come forward to establish a business that becomes the heart and core of our convention of life. But at that particular time, there were those individuals who didn't believe that, because the white brothers were saying to them, no, you don't need your separate things. You don't need anything for yourself. We will provide it. All you have to do, you do the writing that we say, and we'll take care of it, and everything will be fine. The boys kept saying, no, we need your own. And there was the struggle. You see, this may not even sound revolutionary to you today, because you've arrived at the point where black folks are supposed to do things. So black Arab individuals were saying, no, no, black folks, you do what you're told to do. Well, Boyd said, no, no. So when he began to establish the business, there was opposition by the blacks as well as the whites. Well, in the process, he had to use his own funds, the wealth of his own family, investments of his own family, And he developed a business. He began to sell Sunday school literature that we take so ordinary today. All that was produced for whites. He had to take white to produce Sunday school literature for a while. Then the blacks began to write their own literature. He began to publish this literature. And as it began to grow and expand, well, then individuals began to see that it was a profitable type of business. And so they wanted in on it. But as we usually do, we want people to develop things, and then we want them to give them to us. And Boyd said, no, I had to spend my own money. I tried to get money out of you. You wouldn't help me. I tried to get cooperation out of you. You wouldn't cooperate. I tried to get support out of you. You wouldn't support me. And so now I'll sell it to you. He said, oh, no, we developed it. He said, I got it. He said, well, it's ours. And so this struggle as to who owned the publishing house was the thing that eventually culminated in 1915 in the separation of the Baptists. At that particular time, it was the National Baptist Convention of USA, incorporated in the National Baptist Convention of America. And incidentally, the only thing that's different about all the names of these three conventions we'll be hearing about this week is in the word that comes afterwards or the word that comes before. There's a four in the name, it's the same. National Baptist Convention. It comes from the Baptist. Beginning idea is National Baptist Convention. Now, what do you do with that? All right, the largest body, National Baptist Congress.
The National Baptist in what? In America?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm trying to figure out which one followed the board leadership
of America.
Now,
and where you are, and we'll come back to it. But where you are is what I'm working on names, which would be easy to identify. National Baptist Convention. That's the core. All right. National Baptist Convention of America. National Baptist Convention. USA Incorporated. In other words, just that last part, the basic National Baptist Convention of America, Boyd. National Baptist Convention, USA Incorporated. And that's the way they designated. On this idea of
cooperation or incooperation, and non-cooperation. That was one of the points of struggle of America when it was born. And the incorporated group began to develop a publishing board and all of their own, their own resources, because they saw it as a proper commitment. Now, then the third group, it takes the same core that you have in the second group, National Baptist Convention USA, incorporated, and they add one word in front of it, Progressive National Baptist Convention USA Incorporated. So, I mean, and that shows you actually the true picture of the essence of Baptist faith. They're all alike, policy-wise. I mean, yeah, preachers can move one convention to the other without even batting an eye. They don't have to change anything other than the fact that they're in one convention or another convention. So, with no force, their doctrine, their preaching, their methods of worship, they're going about everything, they're identical. And this is what I hope you can get, that all three conventions, so doctrinally, politically, functionally, are basically the same. It's in this here structure of ownership and the development that follows. Now, it's not been any point you want to. I mean, this, I thought that's all right.
Could you speak about the Progressives and what that has to do with the National Baptist Convention of the United States of America in 1961?
In 1961, my understanding basically is this. That, I better start with a personal word. In 1953, I was in the Incorporated Convention. I passed the Incorporated Convention. In 53, I was in the state of Washington, the city of Seattle, pastoring the Mount Zion Baptist Church in the Incorporated Convention. I had come from Kansas, which all the churches that were connected to the Incorporated Convention. And in 53, there had formed in the convention a sizable controversy that believed that the presidency should be restricted to tenure, or term of office, that they should not be elected and then go on indefinitely as long as year after year. They thought about 3 or 4 year tenure should be the length of the person should preside over the convention. Well, now this seemed to be a very good idea, and it was catching on. And the forces that, as I understand it, that, and as I'm interpreting these things, and I was in them, I may be too close to know, but as I was in it, I was a part of the forces of tenure. And we elected Dr. D. Jackson as the president of the Incorporated Convention. And then came the struggle where Jackson saw certain things declared illegal and certain modifications and procedures that had been followed had not been in keeping with the Constitution of the Convention. And so he had certain things voided, and he had control of the Convention at that time. They moved on with him serving as long as he wanted to serve. He threw his address. The method was to get up and move to suspend the rule and elect the president to succeed himself in office. That was the method of operation. Well, most of these brethren who had been for tenure had still stayed together. And so in 60, 59, 60, 61, it began to affirm it. We've been good weeks, so to speak. We led the force of tenure, we elected Dr. Jackson now, of all his tenure, the idea of tenure, and so they couldn't get a hearing, and so they pulled up and started as a progressive wing, so to speak, of our National Baptist. And they established in their constitution the idea of tenure, in the office of president and all the officers. And I think that was basically the part of it. I'd not to give a word of caution. In fact, at that time, I don't think I recognized it. I'm not too sure that they recognize it now. That within the Baptist structure, there's always the idea of continuity in office. You go on. You elect pastors of churches, and you don't think about the tenure of the pastor of a church. The idea is long, you can get longer. You we thought in order to spread it around, you ought to have this idea of tenure. And we looked at our white Baptists. We said, look at the white Baptists. They changed. Yeah. We do things because other folks do it. But we failed to look at one thing. We missed an important point in the white convention. The presidents change, but the secretaries do not. The continuity in our white Baptist convention was born in the secretariat and not in the president. Well, now, we didn't have those resources, we didn't have the money. And so our secretaries are primarily voluntary persons. And so the control and the continuity of the conventions go all in the office of the president, just like in the office of the pastor. Now, very few of our churches can operate long successfully without a pastor. Some of them who have structured themselves and have an organization and development, while you have a cohesive group, they can carry on. And now that's what you found in the white conventions. You had a secretary that, and you look in the records and they go on 15, 20, 30 years as secretary of the convention. The presidents change every year. Ours is just the reverse. Of course, all of our offices go on. The main problem in our convention is to give yourself an election, make it for example. You said, man.
Yes, you mentioned a while ago that when you came to the temple, that when you're in heaven, most of the churches there were associated or were members of the incorporated.
The easiest way to define it, and we can understand in our discussion here, I'm an American convention, but be sure not to confuse with the American Baptist Convention, which is basically white. But just thinking about National Baptist Convention as a whole, I'm an American. Incorporated, USA Incorporated, the third group, the Progressive Group. That's the short way.
Forgive my question. Is there any primary affiliation or membership that can be followed by geographical groups? Is there a concentration in one group as opposed to another that can be correlated to geography?
I would say there's not. And even the youngest group, or certainly the youngest group, was organized less than 20 years ago. You have churches in New York, the East Coast, all the West Coast. You have concentrations in states, like Kentucky, about a half of the brothers who were in the Charlotte Convention, Western League, Progressive Convention, where they organized. You have a large segment that went to the Progressive Convention in California. Now, in our convention, you see, as you live and as the conventions exist over a period of time, they begin to pick up momentum in other areas. Now, in our convention, the largest, and I would say, in fact, in all the conventions, the largest block of them are in Texas. And then you have a large number in Mississippi. And you have them in Florida. And you have them in California. Louisiana, and then Illinois, and Indiana, New York, way down the line. Whereas in the Incorporated Convention, New York would be way up. But you can think about the large metropolitan areas, and it's surprising how many Baptists you find in these particular areas. Like one association we have in Texas has 500 churches. The General Baptist Convention of Texas under M.L. Price, who's the first vice president of our convention, they have pretty close to 10,000 people at assembled in a state convention. I mean, it's almost outlandish when you begin to think about the concentration of people. There are thousands of churches. Now that's just in our convention. There's that many in the Incorporated Convention. And a significant number in the Progressive Convention. And this is why we said the statistics we have are intestines. We just have to kind of see what we got spread out. I don't know any black Baptists that aren't Texans. Mississippi, Louisiana, the whole section of California, Southern California. When I was pastor in the state of Washington, I was in the appropriate convention at that time, but I helped to establish 18 churches myself. But what you had going in that area was the fact it was the wartime. And blacks were moving into the Pacific Northwest. We never had any idea that black folks were going to be up there when I first went up there. I think if I had 150 people on Sunday morning, I had a crowd. But I took in over 4,000 people. And some of them didn't like my administration, and I knew they were accustomed to something else, so I did get another preacher that looked like that. And I said, if you'd like that church, that's what I'm doing.
Don't become the victim
This is where we had this great tension in our struggle to be black church. You see, we didn't make ourselves black church. We were just cultural patterns made us black church. And we are Christian. This is where the tension always comes. How to be Christian and still black. And all of your life, you're going to find this tension. Because you're going to find this tension, how can you say, I want to be cultured, I want to be trained, I want to be educated, I want to be able to stand on my feet in order that I might be in an inclusive society, that I might be an integrated part of society. And all the time, as you are striving to be integrated, society also isolates you and puts you back in black church. This is the thing you will always be wrestling with. I hope you begin to solve your life now, but I don't have it. It's a tension that you'll serve under. To what point? And this is one of the things that you find developing in our conventions. You find those individuals who want to give articulation to the woes, to the similes, to the aspirations of black people. And then when I want to do a little needling, I ask them, I said, what are the aspirations of black people to many other people? All people want to be free. Oh, I know the culture of black and white has put us at the bottom of the totem pole, so to speak. Here we are.
Us trying to integrate society on one, and then when the white society forces us back to the church, you said, makes us individuals.
I see cycles having developed. Your fathers and forefathers had the emphasis, let's get integrated. That was the pitch. Let's get integrated. Let's be included in society. Let's train ourselves. Let's get ourselves culturized. Let's get ourselves developed. Let's get ourselves straightened up. And we can be integrated. And this worked up to a point. And the point was, we finally woke up and discovered that integration in this major culture worked only one way. The blacks were to go in to the white society. And the nice black people, well trained and perfumed, they were accepted. They were accepted into the fine integrated society. But then they began to brainwash those that had been perfumed. And they begin to say, well, I don't want to be bothered with those other blacks down there. I'm in. And then, lo and behold, we discovered that the only way that integration was working was the fact that they wanted the cream of the black society to come over to the white church. It says we deal with church. I just restrict that area. Come over and be a part of the white church. And we'll give you position and power, and you'll be a part of us. And then you let the rest of the black folks go on. And then we discover that an integration that works only that way, because no white folks, so to speak, of any standing was coming over joining the black church. Just leave it over by itself. Just taking the cream of the black church and putting it into the white church, stripping it of leadership, stripping it of all potential of development, and saying this is integration. Well, then you begin to see the other part of the cycle. The black folk begins to say, no, no, that's not what we want. And then you begin to get black youth in the university saying, We don't want to be in the white sororities and sororities. We want to own fraternities and sororities. We want a building built for black folks. This is cycle. The very thing that the youth were clamoring for today and a few days ago was the thing that the black youth had yesterday for 40 years. They didn't want to be isolated. They wanted to be integrated. But then, in the process, they discovered that integration, as I said, worked only one way. And then the black man said, in defense of himself and his own identity, he began to try to find himself and to try to find out where he was so he could have his hair kinky and he could wear his hair the way he wanted to wear it and look like the way he wanted to look. And he stopped trying to be white and nice and he stopped trying to be this, that, and the other. And so we had the other cycle coming. Let's get ourselves together. That's it. Now up to point we find that in the cycle will start over again. That if you're going to get anywhere, you've got to be in the meeting. This is the tension for 5 minutes. This is the same thing with the pastors. And you discover it, you'll find it. You gotta push your folk out there, you gotta send to them, get your education, get prepared, get equipped. And then you'll be hurt when you see the ones that get equipped, they go off somewhere else. They leave the very church that founded them and nurtured them and gave them something and strength. And they go off and become integrated, involved in an inclusive society. Well, I don't know how many PhDs that have helped to get their PhDs and they've gone somewhere. Now the process is reversing. And so I should enjoy a little bit. The doctors are beginning to come back to New Bethel. I just enjoy it. Come on, doctors. We got a message for you. But years ago, the black church has nothing to offer its educated people. I'm just trying to talk right where the thing rubs. And this is going to be your tension in the ministry and your tension in the leadership of our churches. How far can you go? And yet you've got to say to black folks, you've got to be able to compete. I gave a series of lectures on our age boys down in Nashville last month. I raised 3 questions. Question number 1 was, I didn't see whether the black church had gotten anything from its African background other than a beat.
Under what?
A beat. What else has the black church got? Mac. I'm going to raise a question if you don't mind. You see, sometimes we become uncomfortable under these questions because it's a challenge of our present mode of worship. Where did we get it from? Did we get that from Africa?
You know, you'd be surprised when these African places, they sing better than we sing and never do all this stuff at all. Of course, I mean, the white folks told us we spoke to get that, so when we leaders were because they got that, so they tell us that's what Africa means. It means drums. Well, Africans use drums for different things, but we use drums for.
Just raise the question. I'm asking the black church to evaluate its worship. And you see, to what extent is that worship really the creation of the black man? And then there is another question. And that was something like this. To what extent, to how far are we going to carry this idea that the white man is responsible? He can't be responsible for our dumbness, our ignorance, our stupidity. If you just go around, white man is responsible, you don't have to study. You don't have to make proficiency. Formula to use a scapegoat or our unwillingness to be responsible. What do I mean? The black church has a responsibility, and this is what you begin to see arising
as suddenly in our convention. This idea of, well, you got it in push. The black man must strive for excellence. He must not blame the other fellow. And it was easy for me to do it because he was a man who was born a slave. Wasn't even free until he was in his early 20s. And yet, at that point in his life, he had a commitment to an idea, a cause, made him say, I'm going to excel. Now, sometimes I get the idea that the black church has this positive approach to minister to its own members, this idea of striving for excellence and assuming responsibility. It goes all through the black church to me. It moves even into the area of stewardship. Why is it our churches with the thousand people we have raise no more money than we raise? Oh, it's a sense of not willing to assume our sense of responsibility and stewardship. But then somewhere has come this idea that the white man must give us everything. Oh, they owe. The fact that we must develop responsibility within ourselves. These sites, at what point is the black church responsible to its constituents to say, you've got to produce? Sorry, on the other side, the prophetic angle of saying the black man must be liberated. I'm saying that liberation must also include personal liberation, into responsibility as the children of God, that you being a Christian makes you responsible to finance your churches and not give it the pence, nickels and dimes, and look for somebody else to pay a fill. And we haven't even touched this. We haven't touched this. We're over here, liberation. Well, liberation includes responsibility. And I don't see this in our emphasis. And some of us are reasoning. Well, to me, this is the purpose of conventions, where you get together and you raise ideas, lift them up, you uncover them and say, okay, here it is, you got to do something with it. And this is one we've got to do something with, the black church, seeking our identity, seeking our role.
Baptism or Baptist? Baptist, the Baptist denomination, whether it's polity, doctrine, programs,
what happened in our early history, the reason that the black folk are Baptists or Methodists. I agree with the ones who are coming about the fact that the freedom and evangelical aspects of these denominations appeal to the black man better than more austere, stated, memorized, ritualistic type of approach to religion. But I don't believe it was the Baptist and Methodist strive for freedom for the black man. Most of the people that I find in the anti-slavery issue were in these other denominations, Quakers, Friends. We've overlooked the leadership of these non-conformist groups, the Quiet Movement, talking. And then as the religion of Christ came to the blacks, well, they could understand this idea, I want to be free. And the nature of the congregational polity, each group responsible for itself appealed to them more readily than any type of thing where you get your orders down from above. I think that's what happened in the presentation. Now, today, as I look at, you see, what makes a person a Baptist as we see it, regardless of what name they go by, is their idea about adult baptism. Personal commitment. An individual must make his decision first, and then he must be immersed, and then he must be free from his life and work. Well, those basic ideas are present in so many of the emerging groups today. Most of the Pentecostal groups have a certain freedom. In fact, individuals talk about Pentecostalism has split up more than Baptists, more than other denominations. Many individuals don't recognize this. All you'd have to do is get you one of Mead's handbooks and look under Pentecostalism, and you'll find so many different types of Pentecostal groups that make your head swim. Is this here a question of independence and freedom? You can cross that T, but I've got to dot this I, and you go off and start your denomination. T crosses and I dot. It's about what some of our denominations amount to. You can't find the core of the Christian faith in most all the black groups. The basic core of same. I don't care what they call themselves. The only time we get into problems is at what point do certain things happen? And what's the result of certain things beyond that point? I know of a good, strong Methodist preacher that's pastoring a real strong Baptist church. I'm not talking about yesterday, I'm talking about today. He called me on full scene Saturday. You know, the one thing, as I see it, that's a value for what we call the black church, because I don't know what it is. I like to think of it as the Church of Christ that happens to be black. Because my ministration to people is the same that a white brother ministers to people in need. The emphasis today on new forms of ministry that we have in our seminaries, counseling and family talking, you know, getting folks out of cracks and things like that, ministering to people in different ways. Black church has always done that. We just didn't have a name for it. Maybe we're a training for it. Maybe that's where we could. And much of the thing that we're now putting in professional ministry.
Listen, you know, I'm pastor of the church. united together.
I was 20 years old, and I was so hopeful I was going to change the whole world. I didn't know the world was going to change me, but I, at that time, I decided I was going to change the world. I went back to a church called Church Meeting. Oh, I announced it 3 Sundays. I didn't want two, I announced it 3. Give me all the time. We're going to study on a plan. I came there that night in that church meeting. The church was full. The church was raised something like this. The pulpit was here, and the pew fanned out just about like this chapel is here. Fanned out just like that. And I was up behind the pulpit like this. I was out of line. I took a half an hour and presented my plan. They sit there as patient there, you know. Black folks have Christian grace and they want to have it. They listened. I said, now I'd like to have a motion that we adopt this plan. The little saintly lady, I like to call her Mother Rogers. She had a guard. I never will forget. She had one. They called the elders, the kids there, and said, well, we can't call you this, we can't call you that. You're just a few years older than us, and we call you elder. That's what I'm older. I'd like to make a motion. Said the son, said right there, one of the deacons, tall, like, had a real high, shrill voice. She said, I'd like to move that we postpone the consideration of this plan. Postpone. So I gave my ears. The son-in-law said, I'm on the front seat. I didn't know in those days how to control myself as much. I was just moved and second that we postponed. I don't know how long.
She says, indefinitely.
I didn't hear the most any discussion.
Why?
You want me to put the question? Those in favor, stand up.
Everybody.
Either that nobody gets it. So all of you in favor of postponing, sit down. The Lord be with you until we meet again. I went on out there, went up the steps, and the parson was right behind. I went out the back door and right next door. Sure, it's me, you heard me say.
Mother Rogers.
Elder, don't you have a class at such a time tomorrow? I said,
yeah.
Well, now, why don't you come by and I'll have lunch for you tomorrow? You come by after your class, I'll have lunch for you. Well, now, I never was, I'm foolish, but I've never let foolishness pass up some good food. I went on by next day and sat down. Ellen, I know you're kind of surprised, Mother Rogers, that
checking up at the white church. Everybody said it was a fine, fine program. Beautiful. She said it was, Eleanor. I said, but you know what? I said, you sure have a high estimation of your congregation. You know, it took you a year to work that program out. And you came there in 20 minutes or half an hour and gave it to us and expect us to digest it just for you. I was doing for those black folks what white folks have always done for us. See, they work it out and come and give it to you. They say, now accept it. We have fixed it. And until recently, we haven't learned how to make a motion to postpone consideration indefinitely. And you all are learning in your churches. If you're going to lead people, you've got to learn to take people along with you. Otherwise, what you oppose. The white folks doing worse. Mm-hmm. Most of the problems come in conventions, in church life, because that one principle, a little group, does all the things. And they give it to the other folks as ex cathedra. Pontifical blessing. From the elite and the intelligentsia. I hear it, the dumb folk, you say. You better learn to change that thing. Because black folks have learned how to move to postpone consideration. In depth. And then the wrangling starts. The leadership says you're opposed to me. But you know, they weren't opposed to me. They didn't have a thing in the world against me. They didn't have one thing in the world against me. Every one of them loved me. After we got that thing out of the way, they just went on and put their arms around me, and I went on and started putting the same program in that I tried to get them to adopt the thing, and started putting it in piecemeal, taking it along with them. And when I left there, we had the whole thing.
Right.
This is the technique of conventions that cause it. Cause of evil. We won't sit down and talk. And no one wants to listen. It's not the one. We don't talk. So, we usually choose sides. And so back in 1880, when they got them together, we weren't together long enough. A new idea sprung up. 1896, organized a publishing house. And then something else happened that nobody talks about. Another convention was organized. Baptist. And still in existence. No one knows what's talking about. It was organized.
himself said that too much money was going to the expenses of raising the money for the foreign people. Not enough of it was going to the foreign people. This is problem with stewardship. And the black church, as I see it, has got to fix stewardship. And I've been mentioning to this session. Going strong. Doing a beautiful job in the foreign mission. It's called the Lot Care. Foreign Mission Convention. Headquarters is in D.C. And their area is pretty close to $1 million a year for foreign mission. It's composed of pastors from all of our the one principle that at least three-fourths of what comes in for foreign missions must go to the foreign. I hope that kind of gives you a little bit of the atmosphere and things that create the problem of the splitting of conventions and the moving them apart. It starts with the same type of thing that you have in the local church. In the local church. And the more I think about our conventions, they're almost operating just about like local churches operate. They all have higher planes, structure, all about the same. Our presidents are almost pastors. So they have the question of longevity. Under the parent body, there are other conventions, and this is one of the I think is one of the weaknesses of the black church that we're going to have to face up to. We have too many sub conventions. We have too many of them in our local churches. There are sub conventions now, like the women are organized in our. Women's Auxiliary, which Fanny Thompson of Phoenix, Arizona, of Tucson, Arizona, is the president. And she has what we call the Women's Auxiliary of the National Baptist Convention. We've even carried that a little bit further because we had a junior women's convention. Organized it as a junior woman, was still the president of it. 10 years ago, the president didn't want to bother, so he just recommended it to become senior women's body number two. So now we have two senior women's bodies, because the junior women's president was older than the senior woman. We have this Women's Auxiliary of the National Baptist Convention of America. And we have Senior Women, too. pastoral advisor, so I've had the unhappy job of looking at birth certificates and things like that, driver's license, and all the friction and confrontation that goes with this idea of proving how old you are, how old you are not, or something like that. And so we've had a change over that in the last 10 years. About they stay there about 3-4 years, and then the leadership changes, and the one who goes out, they become the senior advisor to the women that are left in. They're developing a beautiful child. Now that's 3 women's conventions that are under the National Convention of America. And then we have a brotherhood convention. The brotherhood convention is another auxiliary that's asked to do certain jobs and tasks, and it's composed of senior men, of adult men. And they've been talking recently about having a junior brotherhood, but we can't get together on the age limits of that. And so that's still in the talking stage. But then we have, in addition to the senior women one, senior women two, and the brotherhood, we do have a youth convention. And the youth convention got to a point where the young preachers, it's a human characteristic. I don't know why it is. That when folk get started in one place, they don't want to go anywhere else. And so they had to decide to start them some young men for Christ, the preachers. So they'd have some place to preach as young preachers. I said, how old do you have to be an adult? And they said, well, but those old folks up there, they won't let us preach. So this comes into the question of the age of the ministry in our convention. And I would say that 50 to 60% of it is well over 40 years of age, and it's other segment. I'm not too sure that other percentage is that small or that large in the convention ministerial wise. And you have this question of no licensing or ordaining. That's one of the things that the black church is going to have to face up to. We said it's in the convention, so let's go on. But is this a proper use of the funds that God gives to us? That all these folks have to take a ride up to a convention where you have 1,000 folks up there learning how to, the bushes learning how to put their arm out this way and how to put behind themselves and bushes. Maybe we structure. We're wasting time on structure. Maybe some folks have an idea. Maybe the ushers of the church ought to be under the deacons. Let the deacons be responsible, that type of thing. Maybe we need to kind of do something to structure. Maybe we need to do that. We've taken on all the weaknesses of the other structures, and we've multiplied that into our own. We say we get to some place. The more organizations we have, the more the better it is. And it's because, as I see it, of the question that we refuse to face up to this question of stewardship. And many individuals have not seen it. Why do we have these organizations? Why do we have all these clubs in the church? We have them in order that we can raise some money to pay the bill. And all the time we teach our people to tithe and to give
they got missionary groups, most of them. They don't study missions. They get ready how to study projects in order to get some money to operate the machinery. I'm raising a real concern that you've got to face. That's this question of stewardship in the Black Church.
You touched on something I want to elaborate on.
Can't hear you.
I said you're touching on something I want to elaborate on. What is the theme of the Black Church?
What is the what?
What is the theme of the Baptist Church today?
What is the
what? In other words, what does the Lord want us to do?
What does the Lord want the Black Church to do?
The people.
The Lord wants the Black Church to help build the kingdom of God. You see, this is where maybe I have learned to move to a certain point. To me, our first emphasis must be up on the church. And then bring the Black emphasis. If you major to me, now, I may be on the curriculum, maybe I may not even be in the ball game. But if you bring the Black emphasis before you bring the gospel of Christ, before you bring the charisma, before you bring the teaching of the heart of the gospel. The question I have to ask Black people, are you Christian? And that's what I think we're going to ask ourselves. Are we Christian? Are we Blacks? This is what the white man has to ask himself. How else could the white man enslave people if he had to put his culture before his religion? And I can't go with some of our Black predators as anything is justifiable and usable as long as it brings the liberation. But to me, you ask me, to me, the program of the Black Church must be the program of the church that we put the blackness on. Now, I know the emphasis that some individuals give, that God has put the black man here for the salvation of the world, the salvation of the white man. I've heard this quite often. I like that. In other words, are we losing ourselves in the process of allegedly saving somebody else? That's all. I just want you to think about it. You know, you've got to look at the other side of the coin before you can really evaluate the side of the coin that you have. That's all I'm asking. And all I'm saying to you is, look at the total picture. Don't get your focus so much on blackness that you cannot see the church. That's all I'm saying. And surely, I think that the Black Church, or those Christians who are in the Black Church, they've got to strive constantly for the freedom and justice and liberation of themselves and of all people. Every once in a while, I see individuals adding some other minorities into their preaching. Because somehow, down the line, their conscience gets seared with this idea that they're narrowing it down too much onto black people. Every once in a while, they include somebody else as a minority. Because you just can't keep working at this thing and digging at it and think that the Lord just wants to say black people.
same thing in blackness that the white man had in whiteness. That the only thing that they wanted, the only ones that God wanted the white folks, and that boy wants you black folks to get as white as you can, and come on, we get saved. Pretty soon we're going to go to another extreme. The only thing God wants are black, and so you folks go out and get a suntan as much as you ought to come on, and God will save you. No. We need a balance. And the secret to me of the strength and the power of the black church that God is calling upon these days is a black people that's well balanced and know where they're going and want to embrace the totality of the kerygma of Christ in order to bring the salvation of God into the world.
That's black things. Do you believe that in the process of Christian maturity, in the process of God building himself to man, that possibly that God could use other people, not because of special, he can use the people not because they're special in a way that they just stand above another people, intellectually or what have you. But do you believe that he can use a people, or you can say a person, to liberate not only himself, but other people through the process of Christian maturity?
Definitely. Definitely. And but I thought you were going to touch on the point that I've been pulling around and hoping you'd see on the point. you see, what I'm trying to say is that God raises up the one that man puts down in order to bring his salvation to us, to that which we have rejected. Man has rejected. And what man rejected originally was blackness. And God is exalting blackness in order that God can bring salvation to that which man has rejected. Are you getting with me? But now, I don't want the black man, in the process of his being used by God to bring God's redemption to mankind, to become so arrogant that he will replace black nationalism with white nationalism with black nationalism and lose his balance. For as he matures and finds out who he is as the people of God, he can stand erect and he can reach his hands out to all people because he's the instrument of God.
Yeah. For our black children, would it not be helpful to see some pictures of crises that are not quite made of the brown? In many of our churches, if we suggested the removal of the picture of the white Christ, we would split them. You know, if you took even a small group and tried to discuss removing the picture of the white Christ and putting the picture of a brown Christ, you might split the church. What's some of the dynamics behind this?
Well,
that we want this white Christ to remain there.
I think maybe our first dynamic is to get some black disciples on the press paper. You see, all the folks that they see, the kids see, children see. A white disciple. We're just getting into this. Some of these folk here begin to bring the black folks out of the Bible. You see, everybody we see in the Bible by name, they're white. But we're beginning to be surprised that some of them are black. Well, I think the first process in getting black people is actually to lift into focus the fact that in the process of God's revelation, he has used all people. We've been denied this. This is our brainwashing. This is what R.H. Boyd was against. Everything he saw, he was a slave, but everything he saw was the fact that the white man said, this is it, it's white. He made all the characters of the Bible white. He didn't tell us which ones were black. Now we're beginning to find out that some of them were black people. And lo and behold, we find out that some of the great warriors of yesteryears were black people. And it's a question of black culture. We're putting it into focus, and we've
people allowed it to be out. Now, if I've been brainwashed and everybody's told me that I ain't much see and I don't need to worry about it, well, now you're going to have a hard time of giving me a black price when you haven't given me even a black co-laborer.
Right.
That's dynamic number one. You see, we're trying at the top. And we won't do the grassroots. One of the beautiful things that some of our literature is doing is that they're giving us black pictures of black people. But that won't do it. I look at them beautiful, young people, vibrant, involved, but that won't get at the problem you have. You see, because the problem you have, and we have, and they're confronting, is the fact that we have always been taught that Jesus Christ was white. The apostles were white. The leaders of God's people were always white. This is what's ingrained in the black man. And now we're beginning to see we've got to pull that out and put it into proper focus and see that some of these folks that we thought were white were not white. And when some of our elders begin to see that, they begin to put this thing in balance. Because I tell you, it's a shock of my life when I left Indianapolis as a young lad, stopped in Kansas City and went to the park out there and went to the museum. There I saw on the walls the Madonnas. And I looked at the Madonnas, and there they were, yellow. Japanese, Chinese Madonnas. And I said, how in the world can this be? How can that be? Well, then I began to discover it took me a long time to adjust to it. I was being prepared for what I was going to experience a few years later in Seattle when I had one of those genius artists, you know, untrained, but worked it out in etchings. And when he came up and gave me a picture and etching, I have it in my study now, I've had it over 30 years, a picture and etching. Three different segments on the picture. And one in the center of the picture was the Madonna and child. And over on this side is exaltation, pride. Over on this side is lynching. And right in the center was the cross. And I said, tell me, man, what's your message? He said, that's the black Madonna. What does a black woman think when she holds her child in her arms? Does she see him excelling, climbing, moving forward? Or does she see him over here with a lynch rope around his neck? What did Mary see when she held the Christ? Child of God. Did she see the cross? When you sit there and look at that picture and think about the message that the man's trying to convey, he's after the same thing you're raising. Every people must learn to be able to see their God and the image of their God in their own lives. What you see, God was not like us, like us. That's what we've been talking. And so you've got to undercut all that. And you can't do it. You can't start at the top of it with a finished program. They learn to postpone. In death.
I have two questions. Basically, dealing a lot.
I can't hear you.
I have two questions basically dealing a whole lot with the youth of the church. And one's getting back to the multi-dimensionalism that's in the black church. When you have, I just want basically your opinion on it. If you have so many different organizations and conventions that need a major convention. And then within the black church, there's a certain thing that after you are in something that you're talking about, you don't move people out of certain organizations. That means what is being done within the convention to make it easier for the youth of that convention to come in, but being as a part of that convention that is more functional instead of as the children that are just being at the bottom of the totem pole.
Now that's the problem. That's what I was saying. That's why I was using those words. The solution that the black churches and organizations and structures have had in the past for it is always the multiplication of organization. The multiplication of organization. In fact, if you get a choir and the choir grows up, they're youth, and one time they grew up, then you have to make that same group a youth choir. And if you grow up, you have to make them a young adult choir. They don't ever want to join the totality of the church, age-wise. And that's the thing that must be broken down in our own thinking. See, in our own thinking, that it's not the multiplication of organizations, but it's the program of the church that's important, and that we must learn to finance that program, because we see these organizations as means by which to raise money. Raise money. Looks like we're going to have to stop here.
Oh, right. We want to thank all of you for visiting. How many of you do not have brochures? All right, here's some brochures so you can know how the session will proceed. Let us give Dr. Davis some hand.
Thank you very much. We have time for a short break now. We'll be right back at 11 o'clock. Bishop Allen will be preaching. Only my undergrad chapter 7. By the time you reach past, we ought to have something taken.
I just didn't have